if Atlantis was a large landmass, the Atlantic plateau that sank beneath the sea, his origin is on the other side. But the appetite's different in the Azores. In Bermuda, ships, planes, and people disappear. In the Azores, they only seem to be interested in taking the people. And the Mary Celeste was sailing along when we left off with nobody on board but a cat. But the ship was fine. Since the beginning of this century, a number of boats without crews have been found on the 35th parallel near the Azores. But the phenomenon did not attract any great public attention. You want me to continue with this tonight? Oh, you want me to get to the ghost story? I will. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
The phenomenon, you know why I'm doing this? The phenomenon did not attract any great public attention. Now, doesn't this beat dumping on you for all your sins? But the phenomenon did not attract any great public attention until 1969, when there were five new cases that can be described at the very least as exaggerated coincidences on June 30th, 1969. The British ship Maplebank discovered a 60-foot unidentified yacht floating upside down. There was nothing particularly extraordinary about this, but on July 4th, another British ship, the Cotopaxi, sighted another unidentified yacht underway with its automatic rudder in operation and no one aboard. And on the other one, upside down. No evidence anywhere of any lives. 2 days later, the Liberian ship Golar Frost found the Vagabond, a yacht belonging to the solitary sailor William Wallen. Again, there was no one aboard. On July 10th, the press devoted long articles to the discovery of the Tynemouth Electron, belonging to another solitary sailor, Donald C. Crowhurst. Five empty yachts sighted near the Azores in 11 days in clear summer weather. No trace of the crews on any of the five. Now, what's the explanation? Now, I've been trying to avoid getting on a subject for some time because it's been so much the territory of the nuts. Even to talk about it might make somebody think I'm in their camp. And I'm speaking of demonology. Now, when Canon Brian Green, the former rector of Birmingham, was our guest here, and you know the role that Canon Brian Green had in my own personal pilgrimage of faith, we used to argue with much fun, remember? To him, the devil was a force. And he had poked fun at me because I believe the devil was a person, a living being. And I took quite literal the biblical description when Jesus said he beheld Lucifer cast down. And I take quite literal the passage in Job that says sons of God are gathering up there. And here comes old Slewfoot. Hi there, Lucifer. What do you think of Job? Let me add him, you wouldn't think much of him yourself. God, you build a shield around him. I can't get to him. Job is the most ancient of books. Christians grow up in the church and hear about Job. That's not a poetic scene. Whomever wrote that book of Job expects us to believe such a conference took place. let me have a fling at old Job. And God let him do it. A real, not a force, a real communicative person. I've already referenced earlier tonight in one of the hours Zechariah's vision. Joshua representing God's people as the high priest in filthy garments before God, Satan standing there to accuse. Well, how do you interpret the scripture? No matter whether you're Christian or not. A lot of people do not consider themselves Christians, but they believe the Bible has an accurate record. When it says that when Moses died, Michael durst not rebuke Satan to his face and contested. They fought over the body of Moses. And Michael said, "The Lord rebuke you." How do you read the Gospels where Satan literally had the gumption to tempt Jesus? Some hallucination? And everywhere you turn in the Gospels, from synagogues to towns along the Sea of Galilee, Jesus is confronting what are called familiar spirits, devils, demons. What are these things? Too cold, Mike. Give me a little. Or no, Peter can. Somebody else can do it. Somebody that knows. Here you go. Who knows how to run that machine before I get a frozen stiff audience. Demonology is the subject. Now, I haven't wanted to get on it, at least until I establish a certain credibility with the audience who know the kind of person I am and the way I research things when I deal with them. But you hear my oblique references many times to the fight we're in and the devil's opposition. Very few Christians understand the real enemy out there is not the sinners. Paul said it to the Ephesians. The real enemy, Satan and his forces. We're the foot soldiers caught between. There's a real warfare going on out there. I don't know what it does to your theology of God. And theology is so abstract, you can a priori just about conceive a starting point that will let you work it out your way. I don't know whether it's self-limitation or what. There's little doubt with what God's omnipotence will prevail in the end, but some purposes he seeks and wishes to work out and set times on his calendar. Keep the devil in the picture until a set time. Now, I want to deal with demonology tonight, spooky though it may sound, and I'm going to start with this Catholic demonologist and read things to you that many of you will not believe. That haven't been where I've been with witch doctors and other things. Now, one of the explanations in the strange occurrences has to do with supernatural forces. It's just as closed mind to rule it out as it is to go overboard on it. Now, I don't believe every time you have a cough, it's a demon. I don't believe every time you have the flu, it's a demon. I don't believe a boil is necessarily a demon. I don't think you can spit them out on napkins. And I don't think the devil is wasting that much time talking backwards on rock records. You heard anybody playing backwards recently? He wants to be heard. You don't need to get backwards in the record. Demonology has been exploited. They made a movie, The Exorcist. And old brother God, George Burns, had a legitimate gripe when he said, "All you got to do is have a little girl vomit all over her bed and everybody believes in the devil. Why don't you believe in me?" Remember when George Burns had that marvelous little speech. I've been to spirit services in the jungles of Brazil. I've watched witch doctors in northern Luzon do their number. I've never seen devil worship to match Haiti in and around the Bermuda Triangle. Too hot in here now. There must be a middle point. So, lest somebody think that I'm going to be normal on this subject, I thought I'd start with a Catholic demonologist, the extraordinary career of Ed and Lorraine Warren, with Gerald Brittle. They're not unknown. I'll tell you something. None other than the U.S. Army, at West Point no less, had a problem and called them in. I mean, they had a real problem. They had guests at the commandant's house, and they'd get their pockets picked. Billfolds and jewelry would be taken off of. Things would be taken. And they discover them later all neatly arranged on a dresser upstairs. I mean, everybody was being suspected. See if I can find this. Well, I know what you want. Now, Ed and Lorraine Warren were called in as the consultants in the Amityville horror case. Now, some people call that a hoax. Like some of the happenings in and around the Bermuda Triangle. Too much is there to ignore it and write it off as a hoax. Like the New Testament, you know, if that's fake, and just about worship the people that perpetuated the fake. Now, hold on a minute, folks. I got a story here about West Point. And I know you don't want me to rush into that swirl that came charging into Ed's house, do you? Where is this West Point story? I thought I could find that right off, or I wouldn't have kept you waiting. And you've heard of the ghost of Flight 401. Anybody heard that? Yeah, I got one back there. The L1 or L1011 of Eastern Airlines that crashed in the Everglades. There's a whole book about it. The ghost of Flight 401. Oh, here it is. Yeah, it was October 1972. We'll get back to... Well, now, let's go back. Beyond Amityville, it's called. Now, Ed Warren was called in on the Amityville horror case. But he had an experience just a little earlier that prepared him for it, among many experiences he's had. He's a Catholic. Now, some of you have been over this before. Will you be patient with me? You can stay there. You don't have to take notes on this. Ed Warren's office is located in a small cottage-sized building attached to the main house by a long enclosed passageway. I want you to get that picture. Ed Warren's office is located in a small cottage-sized building attached to the main house by a long enclosed passageway. You say, do you believe in demons? You say, I didn't say that at all. Well, somebody might have. Well, What did Jesus cast out of that demoniac boy that went into the pigs and the pigs couldn't handle it? They talked back to him and said, our name's Legion. Or my name is Legion, because we be many. What was it in the Old Testament when Saul went to the witch at Endor and she called up what the good old King James says is Samuel's spirit? Now, was that some supernatural imitator? Or did Samuel's spirit actually come up? That's in the Bible, isn't it? I haven't heard a television evangelist this year preach on the witch at Endor calling up Samuel's spirit and explaining to me what happened. I mean, here is a subject. The Catholic Church has got full policies on exorcism. This is not something new. Now, in the news of late, there have been, like many other religious areas that's taken over by the nuts, extreme happenings in that area. It's about time somebody talk intelligently on the subject and research it out. You know there are thousands of Christians who live and die with no comprehension of who the enemy is. That's why I get mad at these evangelists on Sunday. They think we're the enemy. They run around just firing at random. Shoot for Jesus, hit men. The devil and his angels are the enemy. Well, Paul said we wrestle not against flesh and blood. My Lord, I need all the sinners to help me that will. I mean, the saints, most of them, they wouldn't dirty their hands fighting the devil. There wouldn't be no way they'd contaminate themselves by telling the devil to go to hell. They got their hands full dumping on sinners and criticizing saints. Now, Ed Warren's office is located in a small cottage-sized building. I want you to get this. Attached to the main house by a long enclosed passageway. And we've been here before. As Ed sat working on preliminary details of the Amityville case that fateful February morning, the latch at the end of the passageway snapped open, followed by the percussive boom of the heavy wooden door. Footsteps then started toward the office. Ed leaned back in his chair, waiting for Lorraine to enter with a much-needed cup of coffee. In here, Ed Warren called out. Long minutes passed, however, and she didn't appear. Lorraine! Ed called out again, but there was no reply. You've heard this before. You're bored. What he heard instead, building in the distance, was an eerie, howling wind. It was not the whistling of wind under the eaves, but rather the menacing roar of a distant cyclone. Goose flesh rose on his arms. Lorraine, he asked forcefully, are you there? Still there was no response. As the ominous, swirling sound built in power and intensity, Ed quickly thought back over the last few minutes. I'm reading from The Demonologist by Gerald Brittle. As the ominous swirling sound built in power and intensity, Ed quickly thought back over the last few minutes. It then occurred to him that he had heard only three. You know, the hardest thing I have dealing with my staff people and new people around me that come into this work is that if you are striking blows against Satan's territory, you're going to find the devil's fighting you. And he's very real. But let's go on. It then occurred to Ed that he had heard only three footsteps in the passageway. a favorite number of Satan's forces. The striking time so often is 3 a.m. because it's the antipode on the day, if you will, the opposite point in the darkness to the hour that Jesus grabbed the keys of death, hell, and the grave. The crucifixion hour. This is the opposite in the night. Again and again, when you come to understand the workings of demons, threes, particularly in combinations of two making six, but distinctly three and three. He loves to imitate. And Ed knew this. I'll tell you that. Ed quickly thought back over the last few minutes. It then occurred to him he'd heard only three footsteps in the passageway, not the continuous tread of a person walking. Now, you understand, you're not listening to a nut. I got new people who are listening. I've stayed off this subject because this is probably one of the few times that I want to hang right out front. I did a PhD at Stanford University in philosophies of education. I was a thoroughgoing agnostic. Came back to my faith from a hard-headed study of the resurrection. Hate sensationalism with a passion, because the realities of God's power and the realities of demon forces are sufficient. You don't have to manufacture little two-bit booms. I don't want you to think, if you're listening the first time, you're listening to somebody who engages in sensationalism. This is in the context, if you're listening for the first time, of a wider study on the pyramid, on Atlantis, on the Bermuda Triangle. Who were those sons of God who came down and cohabitated with the women on the earth and produced giants? Evil creatures that God had to destroy, among others, in the flood. A hybrid. A combination, if you will, an attempt to create an incarnation that's a caricature. Sons of the daughters of men and sons of these fallen angels, if they weren't fallen earlier, they now were fallen. Aberrations. Unlike the pre-existing demons, angels, sons of God, whatever you want to call them, they produced a hybrid. Earthly, fleshly, and dying, linked with pre-existing, eternal, supernatural, quote, sons of God. You say, you believe that? I'm just reporting what's in the Bible. Whether I believe it or not at this point is irrelevant. Even your Artanach series, the scholarly Jewish series of commentaries, the one on Genesis, offers three explanations. Sons of Seth, mated with the daughters, or rather sons of Seth, mated with the daughters of Cain. That's one option. That didn't necessarily produce giants. They both had the genes of Adam and Eve in them. Second alternative, the rulers mated with the common people. Just as foolish. Then, rather apologetically, they say, and quote the Jewish scholars who offer it, or angels, or supernatural denizens of heaven cohabitating with the daughters of men and producing aberrations. Well, when the flood covered them up, where did these hybrid spirits, now absent a body, go? And when Satan was cast out of heaven, some of them were obviously locked in a pit. They'll be turned loose in the tribulation under the leader called Abaddon in the book of Revelation. Locust demons coming out of the smoke of the abyss to bring hurt on the earth. See, that's just figures. That's baloney. The first principle of biblical interpretation is believe it means what it says. 200 million demons described chained in the Euphrates area turned loose during the tribulation. Some of the demons that confronted Jesus said to him, "Have you come that you might send us to the abyss before our time?" When he cast him out of the demoniac boy, he said, or they said, "Don't make us go to the abyss or to the deep. Let us, we pray thee, enter into these pigs." If I could get every person on my staff and every person around me to understand the warfare in its real nature, and that only keeping your spiritual guard up will protect you. That's why I tell people out here that have the Epi-Pen 24 hours a day, leave it on your house all night. You say, "He doesn't like my preaching." Now, do these things exist or not? That's the question. Are there supernatural beings to be entered into the equation of strange experiences? As the ominous swirling built in power and intensity, Ed quickly thought back over the last few minutes. It then occurred to him that he had heard only 3 footsteps in the passageway, not the continuous tread of a person walking. Something was wrong. Suddenly, the desk lamp dimmed to the strength of a candle flame. Then, abruptly, the temperature in the office plunged to that of a walk-in freezer. A rank, pungent smell of sulfur rose in the room. Suspicious of the unnatural clamor, Ed Warren opened a desk drawer and withdrew a vial of holy water and a large wooden crucifix. And as I've already said, I'd pick up a Mormon Bible if it's on my desk. In fact, I think... Get into this scene. Suspicious of the unnatural clamor, Ed Warren opened a desk drawer and withdrew a vial of holy water and a large wooden crucifix. I started with the Catholic. He then got up and walked a few steps out of his office into the anteroom. As he did, there swirled out of the passageway a horrendous conical whirlwind. You slip out of your machinery there, Mike, because I'll call you if I need you for music and monitor that air conditioning. There's a point halfway between. It's too cold now. Pointed at the bottom, broad at the top, the thing was blacker than the natural blackness of the night. Now, do you remember that black mass that the Yamacraw encountered?